In this week's episode, we'll talk about Lenovo shutting down their gaming phones called the Legion phones. We'll talk about Google more or less giving up on the Google Assistant to instead focus on Bard. And we'll also talk about what we expect from WWDC. This podcast is 100% supported by people like you who subscribe to Nebula, who also get the show a day early and with an optional video version as well. If you'd like to support the show and get early access as well, go to nebula.tv/chillout.
Hey there, back taping this Friday chill out at about midday Berlin time. I'm Tristan Rader, your host and researcher from the Friday Checkout, and Martin from TechOut and the Friday Checkout.
Hello.
You're here.
Hello. It's me. I'm here again. Surprise.
Martin, you're almost not here because I'm going to tell everyone that yesterday you decided to see giant clouds in the sky and then ride your bike directly into them. Can you tell us how that went and have you dried out?
Technically not true. I started biking to the studio and then I had to pick up something on the way. And then I saw giant rain clouds on the way and there was actually like a hail storm. And I was right. I thought it was already spring. So I didn't even take like a rain jacket or anything like that. I was just like in a leather jacket that just got completely drenched.
You did look and a bit like, silly. I'm going to say you look pretty. Yeah. Your shoes, even the whole thing was drenched.
Yep. And I was running around in underwear in the studio all day. So things were great.
Okay. Look, I wasn't going to tell the audience that, but
there we go. Just leave it to their imagination.
Yeah, that's right.
This is how we make it. This is how we start our OnlyFans.
Okay. Now we're getting into very niche content, but I expect the Discord's going to be interested in this, Martin.
Maybe.
All right, Martin, let's get started and let's get into, I don't know, something we've been hearing a bit too much of, which is another Android smartphone maker departing or sort of doing something that is basically going to mean less smartphones. So Lenovo is saying, we've got Motorola, we've got our new business phone, we've got the Think phone or whatever it is, and now we're going to kill off our Legion gaming phones. So, Martin, I'm going to tell you a few details before I sort of tee you up with your thoughts, but Lenovo Legion is Lenovo's gaming brand in PCs and laptops, and that's not going anywhere, as we found out, because Android Authority got the scoop with Lenovo confirming that the phones won't be made anymore. And Lenovo said, Lenovo is committed to advancing the gaming category across form factors, which is actually a really fun way to confirm that Lenovo is actually getting rid of one of the form factors.
Across form factors, except this one.
Exactly. So, yeah, Android Authority pointed that out as well, which is good times. Okay, so Martin, the last Lenovo Legion phone was the Y70, which had the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chipset. And that's it. There won't be any more. And it's not really a huge surprise given that they didn't get much traction outside of China. But mobile gaming remains huge. It's just that mobile hardware for gaming still seems a bit of a weird, like a solution in search of a problem. And it's kind of sad because gaming phones generally did have some really interesting things. And I think it did advance smartphone technology in sort of in what we expect from flagships. So Razer was first, and one of their big features was having a 90 hertz smartphone. And honestly, a couple of times I've played with phones like the Asus ROG Phone 2. I think I had the Legion Jewel Pro for a little while. And I love them. They were huge phones, loads of battery, loads of like weird power options and fun specs and like really cool to play with. All kinds of accessories. I think the Lenovo phone that I'm thinking of had two charging ports, so you could use them
two USB-C ports.
And you could charge both of them at the same time to get dual charging.
Of course you could.
They had the pop-up camera in the middle of the phone, cooling fans, split batteries, and the recent Y90 even had RAID zero storage for increasing random write performance by 50%. So, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff that gaming phones have done.
Gaming stuff always pushes the boundaries because that's how you get the attention of people. You just do more and do bigger and do louder. So that's always fun. Yeah, I agree. It's sad that this is going away, at least from Lenovo. I'm not that surprised, to be honest, because... So as you said, Lenovo as a brand never really managed to get Lenovo phones sold in large quantities outside of China. They only have the Motorola brand that is working for them, and the Think I guess, pad, but now think phone brand as well, potentially, that could have a chance. But Lenovo-branded phones never really went anywhere globally, so I imagine that their Legion sub-brand did poorly as well. Now, the only remaining competitors are the ROG line from Asus, Black Shark from Xiaomi. Black Shark is technically not Xiaomi. It's like one of the companies that they are invested in or whatever, but anything. Anyway, this is basically Xiaomi. And then the Red Magic series, which is somehow related to Nubia. I'm too lazy to figure out.
Nubia and ZTE, essentially.
Which are also somehow related to each other, but no longer the same entity. It's all complicated.
And wait, just so Black Shark also laid off a bunch of people. I can't remember the exact details, but like a cut at one of the factory lines or laid off a bunch of people from the factory or something. So yeah, gaming phones are not great.
Phones in general are going down. And the particular problem that these brands have is that three of the four, so all but Asus, are heavily reliant on the Chinese market. And the Chinese market is doing especially poorly. So I think Chinese limitations on how much time kids can play spending games, like how much time kids can spend playing games, have been really harsh. And so gaming in China has been particularly hard hit. So the biggest market for three of the four brands is, I wouldn't say gone, but like very heavily impacted.
Yeah.
And amid a general downturn in the phone industry, it makes sense that this is the thing that you'd cut. If it's not selling in China and you can't go internationally, then why try? So,
yeah, yeah.
Unfortunate.
I think we don't have a lot of data on exactly like how many of these phones were being sold, but the data that you can see is that Razer made a gaming phone and then exited the market, and we're seeing like less and less of these phones. And I guess one of the interesting things is that mobile gaming is a thing, right? Like people want to carry their a little device and play games on it wherever they are. And for some people, their phone is their only option. They don't have a console, PCs are too expensive, etc. So there is like that nice market of people who like really do want to play PUBG on their phone. And it's great, you know, it's actually really good. I've spent a lot of time playing games over the years. But the problem is but I never really found the need to think I need to play this on my phone or on my gaming phone versus just buying like a flagship Samsung or whatever it might be.
Because I feel like you're not, like I can imagine that there's a type of person who wants to have a gaming phone. Who does this a lot, who does this like multiple hours a day, and this is like part of their identity or whatever.
Yeah.
But when we look at the actual types of games people play, so the mobile gaming industry is absolutely massive. $189 billion of revenue expected by 2024. I think this year is going to be 170, so like insanely large industry.
Yeah,
it's something like, what is it, like 40-50% of the whole gaming industry is a mobile gaming, at least in terms of revenue.
One number I saw was it's 45% of video gaming revenue worldwide, so like that's a huge
portion. It's bigger than consoles, it's bigger than PCs, it's bigger than anything else by both revenue and by player count. So like I think like the hardcore gamers like to point that, you know, it's not real gaming except it's bigger than any other form of gaming. So it's $100 billion of revenue for mobile, $53 billion for console, and $40 billion for PC. So bigger than the other two combined, depending on which statistics you listen to. But the point is that if you look at the top categories of mobile games by revenue share on iOS, and we'll put a little statistic here if you're listening or if you're watching the video podcast, it is puzzle games on the top by 21% of the revenue of mobile games.
Right.
Then it's casino games with 19%. So there's 40% of people just clicking gems and flipping things. That's the majority of the revenue and the player base. Then it's strategy, 70%, depending on how you define strategy, because that's a very wide thing. It could or could not mean a hardcore gaming, or like high graphics gaming, I suppose. Then comes RPG. Okay, fine. And then there's a whole lot more that like lifestyle and whatever that are not card games, hyper casual, that are like not particularly challenging. So there's a ton of mobile players and a ton of money, but a very small part of that actually needs a gaming phone.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess this gets to the point I was sort of trying to make with Nintendo, which is that it has a Switch, and it has amazing games made for the Switch, and the Switch doesn't have tremendous hardware by any means, but games run pretty well on it if you don't have it docked. And I think it is a point to make that Lenovo didn't make a single first-party game for its phones, so it couldn't create a market. I don't really think that was ever going to happen. Lenovo's not really that kind of company. But the idea of, like, if it had made a game that was only possible to run on these gaming smartphones, maybe there's something there. Like, but the chances of that happening or being, like, so unobtainable that people would actually buy the phones and the game being so good, it just never really happened.
There's no way, like, the best game developer in the world would want to work for Lenovo for an exclusive game that only can be played on the Legion. Like, this is, like, it's not a realistic thing.
I mean, I think mobile money gaming, talks.
Yeah, but I feel like there's better ways to. Well, anyway, I think, like, the Steam Deck and the Switch have eaten up a lot of energy of the, like, more high-end but still mobile a gaming category, and there's not that much for phones to do super well that you would need to have a dedicated phone for.
A
bit unfortunate.
It kind of reminds me of the Stadia problem, where it's like, okay, how do we make a game that's on Stadia that uses Stadia in such a way that people will want to play Stadia? And I guess Google just gave up. So it's a sign. Gaming's hard. Gaming is really hard.
I mean, there's still like tens, if not hundreds of millions of people playing, like, PUBG somewhat competitively on a phone. So, like, you know, there's definitely, like, even if it's a small percent of this insanely large market, that is still big. But yeah, people don't seem to be buying the phones for that.
Gotcha. We're a little sad, but we're not exactly devastated by this. But let's see what Lenovo does with its Think phone and how much. And if it keeps this Motorola show running, which we keep hearing is going really well, and there was some leaks from Razer this week that look pretty cool. If those renders hold up,
the next Razer.
The Moto Razer, the foldable flip phone, that actually looks pretty good. So if that comes
Motorola's
out,
Motorola's doing great.
Yeah. So
just focus on that. Kill the Legion stuff and focus on that.
Yeah. Get some RGB. Get some fans into your flip phones.
Exactly.
All right,
RGB
moving
that
on.
Flip phone.
All right. Moving on. News this morning that I was reading from probably last night in the US is that Google Assistant might be doomed, Martin. So it seems that the Google Assistant division.
Big words.
The division within Google has been reshuffled to heavily prioritize Bard. So CNBC had a detail of a memo with various executive changes sent from a Google VP and lead of Google Assistant's business unit. It kind of makes sense that merging Google Assistant and Bard would benefit both of them. The Google Assistant team has that genuine hardware knowledge. On-device processing, voice processing, untold number of queries that it's already serviced. And Bard needs to, you know, emerge from, like, this experimental realm to, like, touch grass and deal with real-world inputs. And in theory, can also do a lot better than Assistant for more
touch
complex
grass
stuff.
AI.
Exactly. The Google Assistant is a pretty well-established thing. A bunch of people have these in their house. Bard is very early, experimental, and a chatbot versus, you know, something capable of actually dealing with real-world inputs. So the facts are, I just want to get to these before I tee you up again, but the facts are the Google Assistant seems to make no money for Google. It hasn't released any hardware in 2 years, which is a really, really bad sign, because it also, I've read that it did 8 major new releases of speakers and smart displays from 2016 to 2021, and has done nothing since March 2021. So
zero.
That seems bad. Google made no money on these, and unlike Amazon, which is, you know, selling its cheap Echo and Ring devices, as we put in the checkout, at least Amazon is actually doing something interesting with those devices by having them in the US serve as a bridge for their Sidewalk expanded connectivity. As we talk about at length in the checkout, which hopefully you've watched by now. If not, go check it out. So look, I don't know. Martin, I'm gonna leave you with this comment, and then we can talk about this whole thing, which is, I saw someone say Apple's smart home strategy of not really doing very much while watching Google and Amazon spend billions and then give up is the way to. But is this realistic? Like, what's going on with a Google Assistant and Bard? And is this just a natural step, or is it something kind of worse?
Yeah, this is a textbook example of an industry that you could spend tens or hundreds of billions of dollars on to achieve, many, many users and like a huge hardware portfolio, and you're like, hooray, you're the market leader, and you've received nothing in return. There's no money at the end. There's no strategic victory at the end. There's just, you've just spent this thing and you've won this category that gives you nothing. Amazon came to the same conclusion. They're losing $10 billion a year on Alexa. There's the most insane, like,
yeah, one of the best numbers ever.
One of the best numbers ever. And they've been doing it. They've been losing this since the beginning. Probably even more in the beginning when they're developing all this stuff from scratch.
Yeah.
I also I couldn't point to a single feature or like major breakthrough in the last 5 years with the voice assistants. Like, once they were able to set timers and like basically answer vague queries from the internet, I think we like hit peak smart speaker. They've gotten like a little bit,
better sounding
or whatever. But the last 7 years, I don't know. I don't think anything has happened that was like meaningful. I also remember that when Microsoft left Cortana behind, people were like, "Oh my God, Microsoft is giving up on AI. Like, this is like, you know, this is clearly the next revolutionary thing." And then in the end, the same thing happened. That you could say the same thing about them that you could say about Apple, which is that not doing anything in this category was probably just saving them money. Just let Google and Amazon burn these billions while they're busy doing something else. Of course, the point is that the Google Assistant, of course, is not going away. Like, it is, it might or might not make money, and I think there's no point in like putting as much money into developing it as Google and Alexa have. But you want a voice assistant on your phone as a UX thing, right? You want to be able to talk to your phone. You want that processing to happen locally on device. You want to be able to set a reminder. Like, this is you want to be able to talk to your car generally, even though there might not be a direct way to monetize this. It's like saying that there's no way to monetize the settings app. Like, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I hear that.
Just think of it as the equivalent of a settings app, is what I'd say.
The idea that Google Assistant would be killed off makes no sense, I think, just because of how tied in it is and whatever. But I can see no more new hardware coming out and very little sort of... like the branding sort of disappearing a little bit and taking a backseat towards Bard. I just want to go back to something you said, which has made me think, which is like, did assistants get good enough for the utilities that we actually use them for? So I use this. This isn't new ground. Everyone does the same thing. I use assistant for timers, weather. I very often ask, can my dog eat this? And it's really good at looking up something and telling me what someone reports. Play music, podcasts. But maybe that's all we need. But so how do we go to the next step where we have Bard or ChatGPT, etc., working within our hardware or so on, and being able to provide us with that sort of next level experience that we don't really seem to have wanted or been able to get? Or is it just the fact that they were so limited that we gave up and didn't explore
My running theory, which is I think something that I've said before, but it's that voice is not a good medium for complex interactions. And that, like, you pulling out your phone and just quickly saying something to it, the only things that you're willing to say and that you expect your phone to be able to solve is, like, set a reminder. But if you add, like, a whole visual interface and a keyboard, and maybe on top of that you also add voice or whatever, plus you have, like, visual inputs, you have a camera that you can use, you can upload images, you can draw whatever, then it becomes much more interesting. And then you can do complex workloads. You can open a document and like have the AI look at that and do things in it and whatever. So there's a lot more complexity that you can do there. And I think the sky is the limit, and it's going to be significantly more interesting. Also, voice is like if we ever thought that these AI chatbots are going to be awkward at putting ads, for placing ads, which they are, and this we also talked about whether or not this will just destroy the whole Google ad business. It's still possible, right? We've seen Microsoft do it with their Bing AI chatbot
this week. Yes,
so it is possible to place ads in this, and I think it might even work reasonably well in text. But there's no way to place ads into voice naturally, like without it being just like insanely aggressive. Like imagine your Alexa speaker going like, "Hey, so do you want to buy some flour something tomorrow? Go. By the way, this was a sponsored post." Like, you know, it doesn't work.
Yeah, so, that makes people pull out their gun and shoot.
Yeah, just unplug straight away.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it turns out that you can't unplug it because it is harvesting radio energy from radio waves in it from Alexa's sidewalk. And this thing is listening to you whether you want it or not.
Good. I'm glad. I've got some dystopian stuff for you later, so stick around for that. Actually, this also makes me wonder. So people have been beating up Apple for their lack of large language model and generative AI sort of stuff, and why Siri is so bad. And maybe this is why Siri is so bad, because Apple's like, actually, we don't need it to be any better. No one really needs this, and we're just going to wait for the next thing. But where's Amazon on large language models? I genuinely don't know. This is a question that probably I could ask Alexa and it might tell me something. But
That's a very good question, Adam. I don't know.
Okay, next week we look into that.
So I have this running theory that when there's a new type of technology and a new technology revolution, like let's say the smartphone, of course the biggest winners of that are the people who actually participate in the revolution directly and are the winners of that revolution. So Apple and maybe Google or however you want to define that. But there's something to be said for a whole lot of other ways to win that involve fighting the biggest war that everyone else is spending their good trillions of dollars on, which is to just serve stuff that runs on that supports this revolution. So by that I mean, for example, you make apps, you make services, you're the cloud service provider or whatever, like Microsoft. Microsoft made a billion dollars a day from the smartphone revolution ever since it happened. And they lost on directly competing with their Windows phone, but then they found a way to monetize it in other ways. Right. So I think just because you're not literally rolling out large language models of your own, as long as some of those will run on AWS and you find a way to capture the value there, you might actually be better off, because you just like let everyone else fight it out between themselves, and you just provide the chips.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Nvidia is the hottest stock in the world at the moment, because everyone can see exactly how many H100 are these sort of large, complicated GPUs that are for AI. So yeah, I'm sure Amazon's working on AWS hardware for that. But I'm starting to get outside what I know about in terms of hardware for AI.
Yeah, but the bigger question to me is not whether or not Amazon has its own large language model, which maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but why we haven't heard of, and again, I also, maybe I'm a little bit grasping at stuff that I don't know, but it really seems like Microsoft and Google Cloud seem to be the winners in the current AI cloud services race. So Google obviously has their own Tensor processing units and Tensor cloud services where you can use their AI chips in the cloud. And Microsoft, of course, has been running OpenAI's
on Azure.
Set up on Azure. And they also have like dedicated AI cloud rental stuff that I think most of the companies are using. I don't know if this is true, but I haven't heard of Amazon doing anything interesting. So maybe I'm just making things up, but actually Amazon's doomed to the end. That's my statement.
Very good. Let's put that there and let's go to Apple WWDC 2023. getting a date for June 5th, along with a, I'm just going to look at this now on my other screen, a fancy invite and graphic, and very colorful. Potentially it's just the rainbow stage at Apple. Potentially it's something else. We should
speculate.
Yeah, so, we should. This is the type. But you've looked into this a little bit more than I have, just in terms of what to expect, and we'll talk about headset as well. So,
yeah. So June 5th, iOS 17, iPadOS 17, tvOS 17, new macOS, new watchOS. So basically, all the new operating systems as usual. I don't think we know any super concrete ideas about what will be in those, but just new versions with all the usual stuff. Will there be some magical AI hidden somewhere in any of them? I expect yes. But the potential excitement is around new hardware, which would be, of course, maybe the VR headset, and maybe a new Mac Pro with Apple Silicon. So that is the last Apple computer that has not received the Apple Silicon treatment. So that seems like at some point they'll have to do it. They said that they'd do the whole transition within 2 years when they initially launched the Mac, the M series Silicon, which is like soon-ish or has already passed. I don't know. Somewhere we're in the range of that. So maybe that will come. But yeah, let's do some speculation on whether or not the VR headset will come, and if yes, to what degree. And then two, what we think the graphic could mean. So what's your take on those two?
Well, everything points to this mixed reality headset coming through, especially if you trust the likes of Mark Gurman from Bloomberg and so on, who's been pretty solid on reporting. I think, was it this week or just maybe on the weekend that the detail was released that like 100 of the top brass from Apple attended, you know, went in person to the campus and all tried on the headset and got ready for the launch, and which I guess we're trying to be convinced that this is the next thing. And there were some questions as to whether that really is, and there were some questions as to whether this will be an iPhone moment for VR, and a lot of people saying, well, actually, it took a long time for the iPhone to turn into the iPhone moment. But
yeah, people always pretend like the iPhone came out and it just like suddenly
everyone had iPhones. So skeptical, and until I saw it in person and like my boss at my engineering company using it, and I was like, I see. Yeah. It kind of, you know, it was so far. Anyway, so the point of the headset, it sort of came with, so that was talked about early in the week, and then Apple analyst Minko Cho, hang on, I'm pronouncing him wrong yet again. Thank you. Trust me to not have the words in front of me and then get it wrong, but he sort of said, well, actually, I'm not seeing, you know, he's very close to supply chain, and he's sort of saying, I'm not seeing mass production start until Q3. So
which either means that it's delayed or that they're only making 5 devices, because that's how many they expect to sell.
Yeah.
There is no mass production. Yeah, there is no mass.
Yeah. But I think more so is that we'll see developers get a big preview of what they need to prepare for.
Yeah.
Consumers will get a little bit excited. There'll be a real strong business angle. And so we'll see the headset, we'll see details of the headset, but we won't really see the headset in use and sort of, you know, like the full, especially not seeing any of the downsides of it. Then there'll be an event later in Q3-ish that'll sort of launch it a bit more generally. We've talked about this together that, you know, Apple seems to know that they're launching a bit of a dud. Like they think it's going to be awful, but they know that they're going to sell 1 million headsets, whereas they sell 1 million iPhones a day. So they're not going to be able to be like, this is our giant new balance sheet boosting headset, but this is the start of something. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's good enough.
Just want to point out, if they sold 1 million headsets at $3,000, they would have a $3 billion business. So,
which is nothing.
Well, okay, but I mean, that would be a Fortune whatever 100 company. It's nothing for Apple.
That's the scope that I made. It's sort of it would be an embarrassing disappointment for Apple.
Yeah, for Apple, it would be like catastrophic. But yeah, so I agree. I think this is going to be a developer preview. I think they're going to be pretty careful, especially with all the reports that we're seeing that even internally within Apple, they're not like 100% convinced of this being like the hottest thing that they've ever thought of. Of course, this is going to need a lot of content to be made to be useful. And Apple does not like to release something into the market that feels like I don't think they're going to put something out where you don't have enough apps to keep you busy at least for a few days. So of course that is going to have to be made. Developers will get excited about this because every time Apple releases a new product that you can put apps on, it's a way to monetize. So I don't know. I think it's going to come out. I think it's going to be interesting, and then it's going to take quite a while until we actually get it in our hands. I would even think maybe a year. Maybe even more. I don't know. Maybe they even do a second generation.
Before we can even buy one, you mean?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a while.
Okay, that's interesting. Yep.
I'm thinking like Tesla moment, you know, you show off the Cybertruck and then it comes whenever they think it's ready.
I don't see there being a big problem with sort of this very limited release. It's hard to get one. You don't really see anyone with them, especially if they're not that great. Like if this, and by not great, I mean like I don't expect it to be poor, but just you have to wear a battery on your side, and that's going to be weird and annoying. Is there anything in the illustration that comes with the invite that dissuades you from thinking that it's a headset? Because it looks like a headset to me. I can think of the
illustration being one of two things. Because so for if you're not a viewer, then just go look it up. But basically, it's a concentric. Not circles, but like what would you call these concentric circular lines? Kind of like this like rainbow thing from the Apple campus. So either I think it shows lenses that would be obviously in the Apple headset, or they look a little bit like Wi-Fi radio waves to me or something like this, you know, like the Wi-Fi symbol. So something wireless. These are the two things that I could think about, but it's probably just lenses, and we're going to be talking about the headset, and it's that
simple. I think the hint at light being, you know, diffracted by lenses is too strong. The only other interesting thing is Apple's Greg Joss didn't, usually there's a couple of versions of the illustration, and there's like a 3D one that you can look at by your iPhone and stuff. There's nothing like that this time. So they don't want to give you too many clues, maybe? Anyway, just a little aside. Martin, we've spent a solid 30 minutes on this, so let's get to the mailbag. One of the questions from last week that we didn't answer was a sort of a meta question, and then we'll get to some other stuff. But so the question was, what are your intentions with the future of the channel that you can share? So focus on community, content building, product development, like a launch platform like Crowd, the app that you had before. Are there any exciting projects to look forward to this year? So I think this covers the Friday Checkout, Chill Out, and Tech Altar. So tell the people.
Oh man, I should have prepared for this.
We can come back to it, but you got to give some sort of insight as to what's going on. Yeah.
No, still, I think my learnings from Crowd were that. It's very difficult for me to do a lot of things at the same time and to do them very well. And I think something like Crowd would have only worked if I managed to find somebody to take ownership of that project. So I would have had some level of input on it, but not nearly as much as I did. Because what happened is that, of course, I just worked more, but then at some point that becomes not sustainable. But the other thing that happened is that, of course, I had less time for either of the projects than I should have to make them really successful. So I had less time for both YouTube and for Crowd. And then, of course, we're also doing Nebula stuff on the side. It was just too much at the same time. I don't think I'm going to be doing a completely different project like this for a while, at least not until I find a way to offload more of the YouTube work.
I thought you were going to say clone yourself. That would have been a better solution.
AI is actually the answer. That's part of why you are on, because I wanted to have somebody to help me with the Friday Checkout. I think it's been going great. It has not really reduced the workload because we just keep adding things to do with the Friday Chain.
Yes.
Desk. It's like,
yes.
What if we also did a podcast?
And yes.
This is always my my thing, but it's fine. It's nice. I also want to see if I can get more help with Tech Altar, but that's been a little bit more difficult to. I'm so married to my Tech Altar scripts that it's very difficult for anybody else to have like a lot of control over them. And yeah. Without that, it's difficult to move forward to anything. But my plan is just to do more content. We're thinking about maybe more podcasts as well, because we really like it. If you have any ideas. If you have any ideas, dear listener or viewer, that you think we should do, let us know, I guess, Twitter and wherever, Discord. But yeah, just more content and better content.
That's, yeah, the thing about your Tech Altar content is you keep doing these like ridiculously deep dives into some really interesting stuff, including sort of these political angles, but you're also not giving up on like the stories of electronics manufacturing and manufacturers and phone makers and whatever. You know, maybe getting the real story from people might be something that you're going to be exploring as well, sort of. So not just research, but actually chatting to these people and sort of getting their story, but potentially.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get closer to the people making stuff again.
Yeah. That sounds good. Turning to the more random mailbag questions. Would you fight at a creator clash that strictly allows bald men to fight?
What?
So this is actually addressed to me, because would you fight at a creator clash, so only other creators, that strictly allows bald men to fight? So I think this is a little bit of a thing about us.
What a chaotic question. I love it.
I'm just going to answer that I would not fight, because if it comes down to you already know more, I forget which discipline of fighting that you know, but it's more than me, and I might have the reach advantage, but I don't have any fighting knowledge. So
I'm pretty confident I could take you. Yeah.
Yeah, you would be our representative.
Yeah. Okay. I did. Yeah. Fun fact for the listeners: I did 2 years of judo when I was very, very small. But I did, I think, 3 years of karate and 6 of kung fu. And while I did kung fu, I did like half of that time. I did quite a lot of sanda, which is like the contact sport version of kung fu.
Huh.
None of these are like particularly like. None of these three sports are particularly designed to make you like an amazing fighter in anything other than their own
disciplines.
It's still, I'm still probably a better fighter than like a random person off the street who's never done it before. But especially like Sanda was actually pretty like halfway reasonably good preparation for for actual fighting in a ring. I'm pretty sure I could take you.
Okay, so well, I think this is meant to be against other creators, so we have to think of other bald people.
Who else is bald?
Well,
DSLR video shooter. Pretty sure I can take him. I don't know.
Yeah, write in with who you want us to fight.
Yeah, just it's only bald creators. They're actually thinking about. Setting up some like funny shows with various Nebula creators, and like one of the ideas is like a creator clash of some sort, which would be quite funny because they're all just like really big nerds.
Those are the people you want to watch fight. Like I don't want to watch professionals
fight.
That's
the people who are absolutely terrible at it. just go.
And at least there'll be no hair pulling in our division.
Indeed, this beard.
That's right. Okay, this is my own mailbag question. I've been waiting to get to this for a while because we have so many others. But do you have any recommendations for pants? This is not a joke about your
pants
actually getting soaked on your bike trip. But no, because I've stuck to this certain brand from Australia for a very long time. But the fabric quality's gone down. Like they start to rip it a little bit more. I'm just not happy. I need some sort of new pants.
Wow.
And I don't even know where to look. I don't want...
Fashion Altar.
Yeah. So what have you got for us? This is going to be interesting.
I really like my scotch and soda pants. I've been wearing them for like 2 years.
Okay. Are they just jeans?
I wear
though?
The same pair of pants like half the time.
Sure. Everyone has a go-to pair of pants. My go-to pants.
Yeah. And they're still fine after 2 years, after one, being out of which 1 year they have actually been worn. So.
Okay. But wait, they're not just jeans, are they?
They're like gray.
Versatile.
I think Kilia literally has the same pants. So you can also buy them, and then all three of us can have the same pants in the studio.
Okay.
Kilian being the I know review tech reviewer.
Okay, hang on. What am I going to buy? Scotch and soda.
I am not going to do this to our listeners. I'm just going to send you a link at some point.
Okay. No, but other people buy. Hey, it could be an affiliate link. You never know how many people want a near pair of pants. Like a good pair of pants is hard to get. I'm just saying.
That's true. Scotch and soda. Generally, really like the brand. I buy very few clothes. I buy clothes like once a year, and then I buy like 10 items.
Yes.
And then I wear them until they break. So,
yes, that's the way to do it. Yes.
So I like scotch and soda stuff. I'm not sponsored for anybody else.
No, yeah. No, so maybe on Nebula you can put a visual of the type of pants.
Maybe.
That we can potentially buy.
All right.
Martin, we will end the podcast now with our trivia fact corner. As always, I throw a number at you and we see where the conversation goes. And this week, I will not make you guess what this number is, but it is a fun number. So the number is section 335 of the Omnibus, which you probably have no idea about, but it's all related to US laws and funding for laws and Congress. But moving on, what it gets to is section 3305 is ensuring the cybersecurity of medical devices. And Martin, I guess just to make it very simple, the FDA says approval for medical devices now requires that makers meet certain cybersecurity standards so that your pacemaker can't be hacked or as easily hacked. And in theory, the databases holding all of your data can't be as easily hacked. So device makers will have 6 months or so to comply, and the FDA got $5 million from that omnibus to help companies do this, not just sort of enforce the law, but actually work together. So, Martin, that seems good. Protecting patient data. On the
server side, they're already like, and on the like record keeping side, there are already a ton of like very, very strict rules and laws in all countries, even the US. Like, this is one thing that even the US can do. Damn government about keeping patient data in a very specific way. Medical devices themselves, that's interesting, yeah. That should be secured. Okay.
So
makes sense.
So part of the fun dystopia that I hinted at before that I've thought of is we are not far from the point where an extortion scheme where a company is locked out of its systems and has to pay $25 million in Bitcoin to have its customers like stay alive. Like that is a real problem at some point. Like it could be insulin pumps like I might have at some point, or pacemakers or whatever. But yeah, like you have to pay to keep people alive. That's going to be fun.
So you want to have only medical devices that do not rely on a random server somewhere controlled by somebody else.
I mean, that's
DIY.
Run it
on your own, like a self-hosted. Whatever.
That reminds me. Wait, I'm just going to look this up. There is like a DIY group of people who want to build their own closed loop system for diabetes. It's called DIY Looping, I think. And I think that keeps you offline. I don't think that sends your data anywhere. But it's not FDA approved for those exact reasons. But yeah, this idea of like cybersecurity for medical devices is a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Generally agree. I don't know the details, but I generally agree.
All right, your head's on the pant recommendations, I'm sure. What to give us. All right, Martin, that is it for us today. Anything you want to say before we go?
No, just that for for anyone listening, Nebula is 100% the way that this podcast is supported. So if you are not a Nebula listener yet, then go to nebula.tv/chillout. You can get the show a day early and also with bonus optional video. And if you are a Nebula listener or viewer, then thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, and you get a whole bunch of other stuff there with Nebula, not just this podcast, indeed, but all
lots
kinds
of originals
and bonus content and support for Martin. So you can check out Martin at Tech Hunter, new video next week. Is that right?
I really hope. Spent about 3 weeks working on the next Tech Hunter video, so it's about time.
And you recorded it last night, right?
Literally until 3 a.m. So.
Okay, great. Nice. Okay.
I better be done soon.
Very good. So check out Martin Tech Hunter and the Friday Checker on YouTube. And on Twitter and everywhere else. I'm also on Twitter and everywhere else, including Discord, where I'm trying to be a little bit more active because it is a fun place. So check it out as well. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you next Friday.
Bye-bye.